The city is already awake. Before sunrise, voices echo through the forum. Merchants argue over grain prices, lawyers rehearse the speeches they will deliver later that day, and clients stand outside the homes of powerful men, waiting to be noticed and hoping their names will be remembered. Rome does not feel like an empire. It feels like a contest in which every movement is observed. Who rose too quickly? Who borrowed too heavily? Who lost influence overnight? Reputation is negotiated daily, and status, never secure, can unravel with a single accusation whispered in the wrong ear. The Republic still stands, at least in marble and ceremony. Offices exist, rituals continue, elections are held, and laws are debated. Yet beneath the pageantry, confidence has thinned, decisions rarely feel settled, victories create new enemies, and hesitation is interpreted as weakness. This is a system that rewards motion, visibility, and proof of relevance, where restraint reads less like wisdom and more like vulnerability. Welcome to the Members in the Room podcast, where we share real-life stories about leadership and their underlying human behavior rooted in science and research. We unpack and interpret the evolutionary forces behind it to help you to better lead your people for outstanding business results. Welcome back to the Mammoth in the Room, where we explore leadership lessons that stand the test of time, using history and neuroscience to explain the human behavior behind pivotal decisions. Because those same patterns still shape how leaders and teams succeed or fail in organizations today. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, CEO of Mammoth Leadership Sciences. In this next arc, we turn to Julius Caesar, simply because he reveals how systems under strain begin to tilt toward concentrated power long before anyone names it as such. To understand Julius Caesar, we must begin with the machine that shaped him. The Roman Republic prides itself on balance. No kings, rotating offices, annual elections, shared authority. On parchment, no single individual should ever dominate the system. In practice, however, the Republic has become a pressure chamber. Political careers are short, costly, and relentlessly public. Office brings prestige, but little safety, and when a term ends, so does protection, leaving former magistrates exposed to prosecution, humiliation, or financial ruin. The result is a rhythm of behavior that favors acceleration over patience. Men advance not when they feel prepared, but when they sense exposure. They cultivate alliances less from loyalty than necessity, spending heavily to gain visibility because debt may cripple them, but obscurity guarantees irrelevance. Formal rules remain intact, yet informal networks determine outcomes as influence travels through favors, intimidation, and spectacle more efficiently than through debate. From a distance, Rome appears stable. Inside, it feels volatile and intensely personal, and when procedures no longer guarantee outcomes, people begin placing their trust in momentum instead. By the first century BCE, Rome is wealthy, but unevenly so. Conquest has enriched a narrow elite while displacing small landholders. Veterans return from war to find their farms absorbed into vast estates, and urban populations swell with citizens who feel excluded from prosperity, yet constantly reminded of it. Scarcity sharpens political behavior, turning office into isolation and status into a shield, so that losing standing no longer signals disappointment, but exposure. Competition among elites hardens as a rival success suggests future danger. Alliances become temporary arrangements built around shared threats, and Senate debates grow theoretically while real decisions stall. Procedure increasingly obstructs rather than resolves, and the crowd responds less to ideology than to visible strength and relief from pressure, shifting loyalty towards those who act decisively while others hesitate. What makes this period combustible is not institutional collapse, but institutional continuation without conviction. Elections still occur. senators still speak, and magistrates still don traditional dress. Yet outcomes fail to deliver stability, so participation continues while belief quietly weakens. Authority gradually detaches from office and attaches itself to effectiveness, as decisiveness commands attention and visible results command loyalty. Systems designed to prevent concentration of power inadvertently favor those willing to stretch constraints, since experimentation with limits creates advantage. Rome does not consciously choose a strongman. It drifts towards one through its incentives. Leadership emerges from environments, and late Republican Rome increasingly rewards boldness over caution. Patience carries risk, consensus dissolves easily, and swift action, even when controversial, signals control. This dynamic does not require malice, only adaptation. Those who succeed learn to take larger risks, to speak with confidence before certainty, and to recognize that loyalty often follows visible success more reliably than formal legitimacy. Over time, tactical boldness settles into identity, and the line between necessary risk and habitual overreach grows faint, not because anyone declares it so, but because repetition makes it familiar. This is the Rome into which Julius Caesar is born. He enters an old patrician family whose prestige has outlived its influence, carrying a name heavy with history but light on leverage. From an early age, he observes the gap between lineage and power, noticing how men with fewer ancestors move more decisively than those with greater ones. He comes of age in the shadow of Sulla's proscriptions, public executions and confiscated property serving as brutal reminders that consolidated power does not consult pedigree. When he refuses to divorce his wife at Sulla's demand and is forced into hiding, survival becomes his first political education. He studies rhetoric obsessively, refining presence and learning how public memory is shaped and how crowds respond to confidence. In Rome, he understands visibility precedes authority. When he begins to maneuver politically, he does so with acute awareness of the environment's incentives, taking on debt, not recklessly, but strategically, to purchase visibility, alliances, and momentum. Waiting to be invited into relevance, he senses, is rarely rewarded. In a system this unstable, moderation can blur into irrelevance. Julius Caesar does not invent these dynamics. He understands them and senses how to operate within them more fluently than many of his peers. He does not start his journey as a conqueror. He begins it as a man navigating exposure, ambitious, intelligent, and aware that standing still is the surest path to disappearance. In a system that rewards boldness and punishes hesitation, that combination carries consequences far beyond personal advancement. Next time, we follow his early risks, the debts, the alliances, and the calculated visibility that transform vulnerability into leverage. But before we go, what does this mean for us modern leaders? If you take only two things away from this episode today, let it be this. First, environments shape behavior more powerfully than stated values do. Before judging a leader's decisions, examine the incentives around them. If your organization quietly rewards speed over reflection or visibility over substance, behavior will adjust accordingly. And secondly, visibility and relevance are strategic assets. Waiting for perfect conditions rarely creates influence, whereas thoughtful exposure, stepping forward before you feel entirely secure, often determines whether you shape the system or are shaped by it. Ask yourself what behaviors your environment truly rewards and whether you are adapting consciously or drifting with the current. All right, that was it for today. And if this episode resonated with you, whether as a leader, a student of history, or someone curious about why power unfolds the way it does, please subscribe, rate, and share it with someone in your network who would appreciate this kind of perspective. And if you want to go deeper right now, you can order my book. It shares the title of this podcast, The Mammoth in the Room. It's a practical roadmap showing how great leaders and their teams can embrace evolutionary truths for outstanding results. And it does that in 3 sections, on people, on strategy, and on implementation. Until next time, lead wisely, think critically, and don't let ancient instincts quietly hijack your modern leadership. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, and this is The Mammoth in the Room.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy this content, don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you on the next episode of The Mammoth in the Room.